we have wildfire inflation, and we're looking at 20-25% 10 years hence. What happens?
Well, that's exactly the beauty of the program, and as Pete alluded to, the fact is that we're giving a guarantee of 12, but if interest rates start to rise dramatically, the state is going to receive a dividend from the insurance companies. If they are earning more, they're just going to take out their expenses, all right? If they earn more than that, all right, because mortality's been good, and Pete and I both agree that, you know, the mortality figures, you're going to have better mortality. Just like Greg said, as time goes on, health care gets better, you're going to have lower mortality. People will live longer. Now, that means the insurance companies will invest those funds, they'll get a higher rate of return, and you will be getting a dividend now rather than a death benefit. So if we go up to 25% and the insurance company can put its money out at 25%, you will be getting, say, 24.25, something like that.
Right, so you're not locked down to no more than 12.5 because of the dividend.
Right. What we started with, Governor, was the fact that we've seen a lot of our clients, large pension funds, locked into money where they thought they were getting a good deal at 9%. Then when during the Carter administration, interest rates went up to 17 or 18%, every one of those pension fund managers was taken out and shot. All right, because what was happening is he was putting a report to the board of directors that showed that their pension fund was earning 9% when everybody else could go out and make 17%. At the time that investment was made in the guaranteed investment contract, it was a very good investment. Just as 12% now sounds good, maybe we could do a little better, maybe not, but the fact is 12% is a very good long-term rate. What happens when we have that wildfire inflation? Well, the fact is the insurance company under a traditional guaranteed investment contract will not give you a penny more. That is why we're not using the GIC approach. We're saying based on how you're doing on your investments, we want you to credit that money to us. If you're making a killing on interest rates now, or you made a killing on some shopping center, we want you to pass that on to the state of Alaska.
Okay, well Peter, why isn't that, using that concept with the insurance investment keyed into it, better or different than the types of things that these other pension funds locked down to 9% encountered with the investments, I suppose, in other than insurance accounts? I don't know. Or were they guaranteed investment accounts?
Most insurance, most pension fund money is invested in equities.
Is it what?
Equities. Stocks. Over 60% of pension fund money in this country is in equities. Yeah, some did lock into onerous contracts that paid low rates of return. Some speculated during the late 70s and early 80s and locked into 15% contracts, which they're now very delighted with. You can make money or lose money in the fixed income market. That's the only point I have to make there. The points I would like to make at this point, I guess first of all, that actuaries are very conservative. I'm going to prove that now by showing how conservative I am. I would be, first of all, concerned over the comparison of this insurance company investment, these policies, with short-term government securities. You're comparing a long-term investment with the insurance company versus a short-term investment into U.S. Treasuries. I think that's a misleading comparison. You should compare this long-term investment in insurance policies with other long-term fixed income investments and decide if the higher risk is worth the possible higher return. I have some reservations then about the 200 basis point gain. What you're comparing is a traditional policy followed by a permanent fund, which is a very, very conservative investment, but short-term with a longer-term investment. The tax subsidies may exist. I will not argue with Dan on that subject, but I'd be concerned about, first, how large are they? I would like to know that. Second, will the policy guarantee that we continue to get those subsidies regardless of any change in the tax law or the tax position of that insurance carrier? Every insurance contract I've read that had a direct pass-through of investment income also permitted a direct pass-through of any taxes paid by that insurance company. And if tax rates changed or the company's tax position changed, they would charge the policyholder for the new taxes. Third, if there is no guarantee on the pass-through, I would be very cautious of the current administration proposals regarding taxes because they intend to get more money out of insurance companies. On the issue of the 12% guarantee and whether or not there's a dividend payable on the upside, certainly we'd like to have that. That would be a plus to you. But to really know how it would work, you would have to have precise knowledge of what kind of investments the insurance company is making and some kind of control of those investments, at least a contractual linking of your investments to a short-term money market instrument. That's the kind of security you want to be tied to. Absent that kind of a linkage, the insurance company may guarantee you 12% and promise higher dividends, but if they've invested in long-term bonds, you may find that when short-term rates go through the roof and they're paying 24%, the long-term bonds don't go up nearly as much. And you may not be indexed to exactly the security you thought you were indexed to. You have to know what they've invested in. Otherwise, you don't know anything about what those dividends are going to be. I can't make any comment on the non-financial issues, the commitment of money and the replenishment of funds. Those are really issues for the state to deal with.
Great. Mr. Carpenter's made allusion to my suggestion that health care improvements would cause mortality rates to decline and longevity to increase. That is the view held by the majority of demographic forecasters, but there is a minority of demographic forecasters who point to recent experiences of the Soviet Union and recent development of difficult-to-treat diseases like AIDS and hepatitis B and so on, who suggest that the mortality experience could go the other way. And I wasn't trying to suggest that it's my judgment that it will get better. It's the majority of demographers, demographic forecasters would agree with Mr. Carpenter. There is a possibility that it would go the other way, and maybe dramatically. Deborah?
I just had one comment on the commitment of funds, and that is that any income that we were to receive annually in the form of death benefits and so on would, of course, have to go into the general fund and be appropriated back to this program. It's not as though the legislature never gets to look at that money again. The dedicated fund prohibition would prohibit the money going, the death benefits going straight to pay longevity bonuses, for example.
I asked, I think last time, whether or not, or at least I talked to you about, Deborah, regarding the spending limitation. Are we in any way bumping that by, let's say we're able to carve out another $200 million to trigger this program? What would that be concluded as being? A capital expenditure, an operational expenditure, something related to the... I'm not sure. Did you have an opportunity?
You asked me to look at the effect of, I thought, the effect on the spending limit of money coming out of the dividend fund and so on, and I was prepared to answer that, but I'm not prepared to answer the question you just asked.
What was it? The question of whether it bumped that ceiling came up. How did you understand it again, that with money's coming out of it?
If the money came from permanent fund earnings, then I believe our office has told the legislature on a number of occasions that a dividend is a dividend, and you can use it for municipal assistance or for longevity bonuses or whatever you want. It's not affected by the spending limit. But
I know what I'm thinking of. The front-end loading.
Yeah.
The front-end loading.
That was it. That was it. If that came out of either the dividend fund.
Well, no, but it was being used to enhance the dividend tangentially by expanding we're getting into a little different category, but bear in mind there are some considerations as to what we're doing to the spending limit insofar as perhaps diminishing the capability of the legislature to use a comparable amount of money for other programs. I don't know, but I didn't mean to depart.
No, I just had the one comment that although if you set up legislation which said that, which authorized the use of the insurance policy proceeds to fund longevity bonuses, it would be simply that an authorization. It would still require an annual appropriation.
The difficulty of dealing with this issue at this time, in depth, it seems to me we could go on for a long time, point and counterpoint, dispute and question and query regarding just who's telling correct. The basic concept to me, if we could get sufficient money to fund the longevity bonus program and not touch the dividends, would be great. I think, again, that would be wonderful if it could be accomplished. Now, that accomplishment, as we know, demands first, as a keystone, a significant amount of front-end money. Now, the mechanics of how that would then be invested to bring about the desired result is obviously subject to some dispute and question. And I'm not sure a resolution or acceptance of those differences at this stage in time gets us over the first barrier of whether or not we want to propose to fund ad infinitum the longevity bonus program. One of the things that troubled me, Dan, reflecting on your proposal is, and it probably is contemplated in it, but who knows what we're going to have in the way of eligible recipients some 20, 30 years from now that might be far greater than we presume. We're talking about a $200 million kickoff package that would generate enough money to accommodate X people. What if we have 2X people? Are we going to end up with an unfunded liability or pressures to come up with, now we're taking care of these folks, we've got to do it and continue and go? I'm concerned about unfunded liability questions, which seem to me are obviated, and we know pretty much that somewhere down the line we're going to be off the hook as far as state and insofar as the annuity approach. This one doesn't give me that assurance. Now, maybe you can give it to me.
Okay. I think you bring up a good point, and since our last meeting, Deborah wanted us to address that question specifically based on the influx of people into the program, younger Alaskans growing up, now qualifying for the ALB, and how could we fund their bonus? And that's what we did, is we put in the numbers, based on the numbers Greg had showing the influx of people into the program. Now, if we have a dramatic influx, all right, of all these new people coming in, and we're not quite sure where they're coming from, all right, but if we have a dramatic influx, then obviously we're going to have a lot more people that we have to pay bonuses to. All right, the cost recovery program could still work, but we'd need to put money into that program to come back. The only thing I could say that would mitigate against that is based on any type of moderate population growth, we're going to be able to take care of it with the numbers we've shown you already. If there is some sort of dramatic influx, we'd have to wonder why was there a dramatic influx, and if that hadn't already affected the balance in other ways. In other words, might it be that there was a new discovery of oil? Might it be that there was some other mineral right discovery that is going to, you know, cause new great wealth to come to the state of Alaska? Because one of the things in my presentation that Commissioner Rudd was at, the same type of question came up from the trustees of the Permanent Fund, and my reaction to their question was that people are not going to just all of a sudden flood to the state of Alaska for the promise of $3,000. So there would have to be some other reason other than moderate population growth that would cause that dramatic influx.
The major uncertainty is not in migration, but the rate of out-migration. And the factor of difference between the low but still plausible estimate and the high but still plausible estimate for the year 2010 is a factor of over 2, about 28,000 at the 25,000 at the low end to well over 50,000 at the high end, depending on how out-migration patterns vary over the period between now and then.
Can I change the subject just slightly?
Sure.
On the Johnson and Higgins memo to us, Dan, they talk about the fact that they're not too sanguine about the ability of the insurance companies to actually earn enough to give us the 12% plus all the other expenses. In other words, they indicate that the return to the insurance companies would have to be something like 20%, and that's maybe not...
Can I clarify that?
Yeah.
Peter wasn't clear on the product when we wrote that.
The illustrations which we saw before yesterday stated, or were claimed to state, that they would credit a 12% return after paying all the mortality charges. And that, to me, is flatly impossible. The new proposal I saw today, or yesterday, last night, does seem to contemplate that it will be a 12% or possible higher crediting rate, but mortality charges will be deducted from that 12%.
The other thing...
So that would that result in more cost to the state, I suppose? Less return to the state?
Well... It shouldn't affect it, because the what you pay in mortality charges today in your premium should come back as a recovery when the individual dies.
Yeah.
As long as the product has in it the proper mortality charge and your mortality experience doesn't vary significantly, what you pay today you should get back in the future.
So you think this 12%, including the mortality charges,
is... Well, that's far more believable, yes.
The other thing, Peter had listed in that memo things like commissions and other types of costs, which, you know, that's never been a part of the program. So the fact is that there, in other words, Peter was mentioning the traditional costs in this type of product, and as we explained when we talked with Peter this morning, we've eliminated a lot of those traditional costs. So we don't need to get a 20% rate of return to deliver the type of numbers we're talking about. But
I think the only commission that was involved in these calculations was the one that was proposed in your original proposal
for you folks rather than for the insurance company.
Yes, there was a 5% commission. There was a 5% commission stipulated in one of the benefit concepts proposals that I saw.
Your original papers to this committee said you folks would be
fine.
So that's one of the questions that's been in the back of my mind, what it's going to cost us to retain these people to handle the...
Well, we've got 5% would be a pretty good payday, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I would think so, yeah. I don't even have to put my pencil out for that.
There again, that brings up the issue of we're not going to make that decision. Let's say that we were convinced that this proposal was absolutely the best, and all the other financial consultants agreed that it was appropriately the way to go. We're not going to be able to make that decision. We could make that recommendation, but...
A recommendation I'd buy.
Yeah, but I would feel that it probably, unless there is a meeting of minds from the various financial consultants that this is indeed the approach, I would be very reluctant to say, and this is our recommendation. On the other hand, if that sort of support was forthcoming, most quarters I'd have a little compunction. I doubt if we're going to find that sort of support tangentially from other consultants, Peter or others, regarding any approach between then and now. If Dan and those who are proposing this can come together in the meeting of minds that will get that sort of response from state financial consultants and Greg Shop, Peter Shop, and what have you, fine. I think we can boil that down to making a specific recommendation. But absent that, then we're left with, do we want to even consider the idea of a perpetual funding and longevity bonus, quite aside from the annuity concept? And that's the way I'd like to go. I'd be perfectly willing to sweep it off the table and take it out of the general fund if they're sure it's funded. I think the general public, frankly, would support that. I doubt very much that the legislature would like it, or perhaps the administration. But how do you resolve that, Broglio?
I have one other general question. You speak of long-term guarantees, long-term commitments. It's pretty hazy in my mind if we're talking about 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. What does that mean? Long-term commitment or
in other words, when what we're giving is that 12% guarantee is once that policy goes into effect, the insurance company is going to guarantee that 12% until all the people in that original program die. So if people live under that program 30, 35 years, and that's possible, someone 65 entering the program could live 30, 35 years, that's going to be the guarantee on that policy in the program. That's why I've been saying all along that's a phenomenal guarantee
that
normally an insurance company wouldn't be making. All right, now, new entrants in the program, things of that sort, I guess everything that I've heard is that the state would not be willing to make long-term commitments the other way to any type of program for 30 years.
Well, in regard to that, my understanding is that when a person applies for the bonus, automatically comes under the insurance provisions.
That's correct.
Now then, a person comes into the applies for the bonus 10 years from now, then the cost of that policy will be in accordance with the situation at that time?
Well, that's where the problem comes in, is because we don't know whether... See, the way that we're designing the program is the state can pull its money out 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, and just say, that's it, we're going to cancel the entire program. That's not our decision to make. All right? What we're doing is providing an investment vehicle, a funding source. So the fact is that if we had this guarantee, the fact is that if new people came into the program, they too would be insured, they too would get the 12% guarantee. All right? But we don't know if the state is going to want to commit itself to funding on those new people. That's why I think the governor asked the question, what happens when we have the dramatic influx of people? 10,000 people, for some reason, all age 65 and over, come into the program. Obviously, that will affect the numbers.
Right? Sure.
But under the present program, based on moderate population increase, someone who's 62 years old now comes into the program and applies for the first time for the longevity bonus, they too will get a policy, and they too will get the 12% guarantee. And that's the way we structure the program.
Ron, could I ask you to clarify one point?
Sure.
If additional premiums are paid in, let's say, 5 years from now to cover some unexpected influx, is there any guarantee on the rate of return on the money deposited in 5 years?
That's right. That's the 12% as well. All right. That's
what if money's deposited 10 years from now?
That's what I'm saying is if the state commits to that program, we're going to be able to have those guarantees based on that reasonable
the reasonable population increases.
No, I'm saying if there is additional unexpected money deposited into the fund 5 years from now, because there was an unusual growth in the number of people, what would be the guaranteed rate of return on that unexpected new money?
That, if as long as it's part of our program, because as you saw in those numbers, we started with $177 million, and then we had $22 million and $23 million and so forth. All of that money is going to be the same deal that we have, 12%.
But I'm not talking about the 23 or 24, because that was based upon normal population growth.
Okay.
I suppose that in 1988, there was going to be a $4 million premium paid in for that year's new entrance.
In addition to the other money.
Were $24 million already required, and that's been contemplated in your program.
Right.
And for some reason, we've got more people that year who are eligible, and we need $50 million that year. So we're putting in an extra $26 million, and that's 5 years from now.
Okay.
3 years from now in the projection I did. Is that new unexpected money going to get a 12% rate of return?
All right. I would assume so, but we have not broached the issue at all with the insurance companies about the unexpected growth.
Okay.
So that I can only give you a qualified yes, because I assume that $24 million is not going to throw off the programs we have. But if it was $200 million, then you're right, it might be a different story.
Okay.
But we have not brought up that subject. We've not broached the subject at all with the insurance companies. So, Bob, to answer your question, is that if we did have that sudden growth of the state's population, we haven't brought that up to the carrier's attention yet.
No, I just wondered the term, long-term. It's
a lifetime guarantee, yeah. Bob, and if
yeah, a lifetime for the insured.
That's right, and that means if we've got people who are 60 now that wait 5 years till they get in, it could be as long as a 35-40 year guarantee that we're giving on that money.
Mm-hmm. That's what I had in mind.
Bob,
yeah, just a general comment, Governor. And on a lighter side, a note, but yet with a serious overtone here. You know, I'm having trouble conceiving a program here that the economic viability is going to rely on a high future mortality rate. I guess I want to live to be old without feeling guilty about it.
You don't want someone calling you up in the middle of the night and say you owe your civic duty to...
Yeah, that's what worried me about this. What did you call it?
Where
the benefits from a certain age group went to other members of that age group. How old are you? No, that's maybe we ought to get rid of you in front of them.
Go ahead.
I just
wanted to add on, I think Peter raised a couple of good points before about the fact is in other types of programs like this, a lot of times insurance companies have insulated themselves from future tax law changes. And one of the things we've done is we said that there is going to be no tax insulation provision in these contracts. All right, that was one of our requirements. And the other thing is, if you'll remember back to our first presentation, one of the points that we brought out was that there would be a monitoring of the investment policies of these various companies in the consortium. And whether we're doing that or somebody else's, that's really going to be crucial to monitoring how this goes, right? Because the fact is that you obviously have a vested interest in making sure that insurance company is doing things that are appropriate, all right? Now, the fact is you just don't want to hear that they're investing in all sorts of junk bonds to get a high rate of return, because obviously that's not to your benefit or to any policyholder's benefit. And that's, I just want to emphasize that. The third thing is that, Peter, with the 5% commission, I just want to go on the record, is that he got that from our earliest proposal before we were hired by the state to do the consulting work. And that at that time we had said that our fees would probably be about $49,000. And if we set up the program, we had factored in a 5% commission and things of that sort. That was before we had actually gone into designing the product. So it's not Peter's fault, but it was a misunderstanding that, obviously we learned that the state can't pay more than a certain amount of money, so we cut back on the amount of our fees, and we also realized that when any of this product's developed, it will not be by this committee, but by the legislature, and then, of course, it has to go out to competitive bid. So that was, we just have to apologize that in our earlier, our first meeting with the committee, we did have that. But, of course, that has no bearing whatsoever on the product as it's been designed to date. So there's no commission built in that product and none of the other things that were in our original list of requirements for doing the work.
I'm wondering to what extent it's appropriate for this committee to get into the sources of funding for whatever program we come up with. For example, we're dealing with this annuity approach. Obviously, it's going to require for the first 5 years or so, roughly $50 million. There's been some discussion of those sources. We had some discussion, Dave Rose's presentation yesterday. But we're not incorporating anything in the bill that says, this is where we think you legislators ought to get this money from. What is it, the desire of the committee in regard to what we're really talking about is simply, should we have a program or a proposal that funds the longevity bonus ad infinitum in the best manner possible and keeps it out of the dividend permanent fund arena? A very simple piece of legislation. I mean, you know, but there have been proposed means of funding it, such as you're coming forth with, that we may or may not think appropriate, but the legislature is going to make that determination whether they can come up with the money to foot the bill and where it should be derived from. And I don't know to what extent we could incorporate in a bill or should incorporate in a bill those provisions. If I were a legislator, I wouldn't pay more than I'd be interested in it, but I think the basic principles and concept and proposal and mechanics of accomplishing the objectives of meeting the first of our obligations under the longevity bonus, the old timers are, I don't think it's up to us really to determine where the funding comes from. The magnitude should be laid out, suggestions of alternative sources of funding, but as I say, and how they generate sufficient revenues in the future is going to be discussed, obviously, at great length before the legislative committees of reference, and I'm not sure to what extent we should spend a great deal of time going into that. I don't know, Al, you're more involved in the legislative finance.
Mr. Chairman, I think that what we should come up with is the concept of a bill, and I think we should leave to the legislature how they fund this particular program and the cost of it, whether it comes from the general fund or from the earnings of the industry, or the type of the investment that should be with the administration and the legislature to make that determination. If in fact they wanted to give a part or all of the money to a commercial investment portfolio, or to have state government do it themselves. I think that particular thing should be left up to the legislature.
Well, that's what it seems to me.
I think what we should come up with is a piece of product that we can deliver that, you know, as I said before, had public hearings and let the, because this will be rolled over a couple of times, both in the Senate and the House, until we get a final product. But we should get perhaps a saleable item to the older Alaskans and to the public. That's
right. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I agree with my chairman here. I think it's our responsibility, though, to get as much information as we can and as many alternatives as we think are desirable and provide that information. Because remember, the legislature is going to be working on
the 120-day
restraint and so forth. And there's a lot of people out there that are quite concerned about what's going to happen to the longevity bonus.
I agree with you in that regard. But what I guess I'm saying is we can't structure a bill that contemplates that source of funding and suggests. I don't think the bill we might come up with to meet your objectives would have within it, and this is how you mechanically provide the funding for it. But surely, let's get what information we can to provide it to the legislature. I think we've garnered a great deal already, and we've got this concept, of course, among others.
My question
is, what do you want to do regarding... We pretty well finalized, I think, efforts on our annuity approach. All right, now we're talking about fully funding longevity bonus ad infinitum. Do we want a bill, or do we want to simply say this is another concept you people should consider, or do we want it in bill form? You want it in bill form.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I feel we've gathered a lot of expertise here with a lot of ideas. I would hope to have to reinvent the wheel again during the legislative session. So that's why I'm hoping we're maximizing our input to the legislature as to what the alternatives are.
But do you want a bill structured to do this? Or just a sheet that lays forth the information we've gathered regarding the concept? Yeah, Marcia?
Well, there are a couple of things that I think that we have to deal with. In the annuity bill, on page 4 at the top, item F, I believe we have now told the Permanent Fund Board that they may have, as an elective, another manner in which to invest their funds, which they were precluded from in the first place. So we have already left the arena of longevity bonus and entered into the arena of the duties and powers of the legislature had prescribed for the Permanent Fund Board.
Well, Where is this again? State chapter and verse.
Page 4.
Page 4?
Top of the page, item F.
Item
F.
F.
Okay. So we have already departed in this bill, and we didn't need to, one way or the other. I mean, because how permanent fund invests their money is not germane to how they even invest our money, the annuity money, inside the permanent fund.
Have we simply broadened their options and given them broader latitude?
Right, but we didn't have to do that. Hmm? We never had to do that.
What is the...
So you have allowed this annuity program, if it wished to go out and buy commercial insurance paper. If you take the position that you do not want to deal with the funding issues of any of our theories, and you don't want to submit any bills, then you wouldn't be submitting a bill that would deal with the undistributed income. We could simply take the repealer off the continuing, off the temporary statute from last year. That's all we would be doing, unless we propose bills that not only change the character of the universe that are eligible, the length and time or duration that the program will exist, and also deal with the funding source, because it's that funding source that's so critical to making the decisions about how long and how much.
Are you saying you want to deal with the funding source?
I think that it's always important that we state either in the bill or very clearly that a certain proposal is very dependent upon general funds or is... were preferable because it's not on general funds, that we make it very clear what we were going to do and how we would have recommended that it be funded. We could say on a particular bill, like on the annuity plan, that the forward funding could come from one of three or four different sources. Any of the sources mentioned by Dave Rose yesterday, the undistributed income itself, the earnings off the undistributed income, the permanent fund dividend itself, or the general fund. And that every bill, we say, what are the appropriate or available sources? We don't have to say it must be one or the other.
Well, I have no problem with that. But Ron said, provide that information on the side. Incorporating in the bill, I do have a problem. If you're suggesting, for example, what I think you're suggesting, we would then change this language and say, instead of may invest, all or part of the annuity investment account in commercial insurance shall invest. Then you're locking it on as far as a direct recommendation that be the approach. And while Dan might be enchanted with that, I think the legislature might take some leverage.
I'm not, Governor. What I'm saying is that you could have written this bill without including that at all, without changing the powers and duties of that board.
Let's hear John's response to that.
Yeah, Governor, we've got a committee report to accompany the annuity bill. It's a report that we're going to have to go back and change in light of our incorporation, particularly Representative Adams' stair-stepping approach. But it seems to me that may be the appropriate place to spend the time necessary to alert the legislature to what we've learned about the Kidder Peabody approach, both good and perhaps not so good, rather than try and develop a separate bill responsive just particularly to that approach.
Well, what about the concern that Marsha expressed, the inclusion of this language in the bill that, as I understand it, you think should not have been incorporated in it?
I don't think it's germane to the productivity or the outcome of the bill
itself.
Why
was it incorporated in? Let me ask that then.
It was incorporated because of a question over whether under the Permanent Fund Board of Trustees existing authority, the board, if it wished to, could invest in private annuity contracts. And it was actually originally inserted not with respect to Kidder Peabody, but simply because the Permanent Fund Board may wish, when a person turns 65, to simply buy an annuity with that person's account for that individual. That's what it's really not germane to Kidder Peabody at all, although we think it's broad enough to give the legislature and board of trustees flexibility to consider the Kidder Peabody investment option if it wants to.
Deborah, you've been
trying. I think we have a semantic difference here between funding source and investment option. I think what...
No. What I'm trying to say is...
Well, you were talking earlier about, you know, the provision to take undistributed income account income. So those are funding sources, and if the Kidder Peabody proposal were adopted, it needs a funding source of $177 million. So it's different from what you're going to do with the money.
No. The governor has said that the funding source is not germane to our work.
Sure, our work is critically dependent upon funding sources. What I'm saying is, for this committee to say that incorporate in the language of the bill, and thou shalt take the $177 million from the general fund, period, would be, first, an exercise in futility. Legislature would laugh up their sleeve at it. On the other hand, I think we should say the general fund is a source. This insurance concept is a source. Here are others. That's perfectly appropriate in your accompanying committee report. But I don't know if, I think we're going to have extreme difficulty trying to structure into the bill the precise method of funding that will receive other more than passing glance from the legislature.
Yeah, Governor.
Go ahead.
Yeah, if I may go back to your original question as I interpret it, our committee here, I believe, is more than just to gather information and consider alternatives. The bill that established us said we are to make recommendations to the legislature. Now, we may come up with several alternatives, but I also think that we should consider those alternatives and in a cover letter or something, actually make recommendations as to what we feel would probably be a desirable way for the legislature to go. So I have to carry it a little bit farther than you're envisioning here.
No, I've never said that we shouldn't make those recommendations. I'm saying, how far can you go and incorporate a bill? Are you prepared to write a bill at this time, for example, that said, we want to fund longevity bonus for a member more, and keep it away from the permanent fund dividend concept is embodied in the annuity bill, and structure into that bill, and the source of funding shall be the general fund?
No, what I'm saying, we should have the bill complete, though, and then maybe a cover letter as to our recommendations.
But in that bill, are you going to have that source of funding?
Say, you would, because you'd be writing a fiscal note, and you would be declaring on that fiscal note the source of funding. You may wish to offer different fiscal notes for the same proposal. But our responsibility is to provide a fiscal note in the to accompany every proposal that we essentially submit for consideration.
Well,
and we always have to give the source of funding.
All right, well, perhaps I shouldn't be talking about source of funding so much as the mechanics of investment. Could that be a part?
That's
part
right, and that's where my point comes out.
Yeah, but of course, again, this is permissive, not directive, and that is a...
But why is it germane to our
responsibility? I don't know, but Jim Rhodes has been trying to get the floor, and Jim is, of course, very concerned.
I'm embarrassed to say I only realized just in the last moments here that this bill would place the investment of an annuity or bonus account in the hands of the trustees of the permanent fund, and they are unalterably opposed to getting into that business. They would much prefer that it be in the hands of the state.
I thought we addressed that.
Yesterday.
I thought we took care of that.
Yeah, we put, Jim, I think the language we changed, if that was a concern of Dave, that I put, or its designee, the board or its designee,
yeah,
the portion. That should have been taken care of yesterday.
The idea, Jim, was that so long as the funds are held and managed by the board, they will be treated no differently than any other money that's managed by...
Said to the board, while you are managing this fund you don't want to manage, you may also use a different style of investment than you are allowed on your other sets of funds, which I think for a board to be responsible would be enormously difficult. Because now you've asked them to act as financial managers in a completely different manner than they're handling on the corpus of the permanent fund.
Divest yourself of any future responsibility for this money and take it and go buy a private annuity contract payable to this individual, and the board is out of the business. That's what it was. That's its original intent, and that's its core meaning, which is something a little bit different.
Does the phrase not apply to all the money in the annuity investment account and thereby apply to all of that money?
It doesn't force the board to go to insurance companies during their holding of the money.
John, the most persuasive lobbyists we have in the state are the insurance companies.
I would go back, if I might, Governor, to the point made by Chairman Adams, that if I understood him is that he hoped that you would address conceptually how you thought the question of annuity or bonus would be dealt with, whether for a time certain or on an indefinite basis, and that he looked to decisions within the legislature as to where this money was going to be placed for investment and how it was to be invested and the source of funds. And all of these related financial questions would be dealt with there, if I understood his point. And I'm just here to say with briefly, I hope, but with all the urgency I can muster, that the trustees, this is a thankless task. They have other commitments to the state of Alaska to look after its long-term revenue, to ensure a flow of dividends,
Well, I think the whole list is bearing out exactly the apprehension that I mentioned. That if we try to get into the determination of some of these financial mechanisms and generation of funds and sources of funding and incorporating that in the bill is going to give us not only a lot of heartburn, but perhaps an exercise futility. Outside of the bill, that's something else again, doing it through a committee report related to it. Now, you took the other side of the coin and pointed out, and I can see you've got a valid argument. I appreciate it now, and perhaps it shouldn't be in there. And maybe we should. But if we're going to say that we want, if it be the trustees, to manage this fund, and we want them to have the latitude to do things they couldn't do before, that's one thing. But on the other hand, I think we're going to run into a firestorm of difficulty structuring a bill that's going to have general support and adequate support to get very far down the pike.
Well, it was my hope, Governor, that we could maybe do some of the spade work for the legislature so they wouldn't have to do all the investigating and digging that we've already done and may do more of as far as, and of course the legislation that we're working under does call for us to investigate funding sources as to whether or not it should be in a bill or in a letter of transmittal. I don't have a strong feeling, and I'm certainly willing to defer to Chairman Adams and Representative Larson, but certainly I feel that we have an obligation to look at where we're expecting. First of all, I think we have an obligation to look how much is whatever we're going to propose going to cost, because if it's going to seem just outrageously exorbitant to us, then certainly it will appear so to the legislature also. So I would expect that they will want to hear from us as to anything that we've...
Well, nobody's disputing that. I've never contended they shouldn't hear from us, and we shouldn't provide them with the information we've garnered. I'm simply asking to what extent should we try to structure that into the bill.
But in fact, a bill may be viable with one funding source and not viable with another. And so, why don't we...
Well, there again, our cover, there are several ways you could theoretically fund, for example, a continuation of the longevity bonus, you could eliminate, you could take everybody's dividend, you could take it out of the general fund, you could...
Well, in that case,
reduce it enormously.
As Marcia says, all we need to do is pass this year's bill with a repealers section.
I
was trying to make is that each bill requires a different level of information in it. You can't write an annuity account. You can't establish a fund for that may have a history of a lifetime of 100 years without specifying its source of funding, who's going to manage it, how they're allowed to invest. So that kind of bill needs that kind of stuff. You have to go in there and say, you can invest in this, you can't invest in that, just in the manner in which you approach the permanent fund when that was first drafted. There are other such solutions that are going to be very simple. One-line repealer on the temporary statute. The fiscal note tells you it's no increase in dollars, but it's general fund. There are going to be others where it might be a one-line repealer, but you go in and you remove the general fund amount, source of funding, and you replace it with unearned or undistributed income. So each bill, we can't make a generalization. Each bill is, in fact, going to have the level of detail that makes it understandable.
Well, I guess maybe that's one of my problems. We're discussing, we have a bill regarding annuity, something to work on, depart from, or whatever the case may be. We don't have a bill. My knowledge, it deals with an ongoing funding mechanism forevermore, quite apart from the... So, but we're talking about possible fundings of that approach. Don't we need some package and the product to look at to see what extent we can flesh it out?
If I can respond to Marcia, she's getting that. What you need is a type of fiscal note to go along with this bill to know what type of funding. But I think if we continue in this fashion, we'll spin our wheels because it's going to be changed in the legislature.
Right.
On page number 2, under B, we said the legislature may appropriate either general funds or earnings upon the undisputed income account from the last PRIM fund. The earlier question was that the governor had raised here, under general funds, as follows, the spending limitation. A legal question that I would ask is if we took the earnings and we took 10% of the $547 million and got 55, does that fall under the spending limit or is that under the operational cost? Because the only thing, the dividend portion is outside the spending limit. But I think that we should leave the language as is. It's going to be changed many times. The source of funding for longevity is going to change a couple times, and I'm sure of it. And so I'd like to just leave it as it is. And I know where you're getting at. We do need a fiscal note, but let the legislature and the administration work on it.
The issue is we write a bill.
Come back to the duties of this committee, as I see it. We had this Ray bill, which now is name's changed. We worked it over, and in my way of stating, we pulled lots of weeds out of the garden, right? We cleaned it up, and we changed it, and we've had sound legal advice and sound financial advice in the course. So we recommend this to the legislature as this is the best of our thinking. But it may not be a finished product, and I don't think they take it. I agree that the funding process could be covered in a report to the legislature, fiscal note or what have you, outside the bill. But I was hoping that this thing was aside and it was pretty close to a finished product, and this was going to be one of our recommendations. And I'm quite anxious to hear them once before.
I would, while we're on this, you mentioned pulling the weeds out, obviously, Jim, but I suspect the trustees detect what their concerns are rather substantial item they'd like to uproot. And I'm just wondering, what is the objection? And you raised the concern regarding this language, which broadened the authority of the we contemplate that the designee will not, you people wouldn't be managing it, but the designee, whomever the appropriate entity, why don't we just take this off the back of the trustees? Any reason not to? Eliminate? Because, let's face it, there's going to be a constituency out there that's going to have heartburn with this approach if we keep it in there. What's the objection to changing that?
I think the original reason for putting it in the permanent fund was the perception that the fund earns more than individuals could otherwise earn, and that the strength of the fund would be helpful to the annuity accounts. I thought we had dealt with Dave Rose's problems yesterday.
But then if they have a designee, which they're going to utilize...
Well, if they're just going to...
Automatically.
If they're going to automatically use it, then there's no sense in it.
Well, I got that impression from talking to Dave that they didn't want to manage it. They wanted. Am I wrong?
Well, my understanding in talking with Dave is that Dave said the trustees had no objection to purely investment responsibility, and that's why that recommendation, that amendment is in there at the trustees, or at least Dave's suggestion, that we call it the annuity investment account. In other words, the permanent fund board has $100. We're saying, here's another $5. When you invest your $100, invest this $5 along with it. We're not asking you to set up any separate bureaucracy. We're not asking you to change your investment priorities at all. But at the same time, rest assured that you have no management responsibilities over this program. You don't keep individual annuity accounts. You don't keep track of debits and credits of individual annuity accounts. And once that dividing line was clear, at least Dave Rose was quite satisfied that the bill was acceptable to the trustees.
But aren't we really imposing upon them the management responsibility and the concerns that Marcia raised by preventing them to...
The issue, actually, we still have the annuity fund itself, right? We have the investment account, okay, and that's where the money after it's deferred is held. Where it's dispersed from to the annuitants or to the beneficiaries is the annuity fund, is that correct? Do we still have two accounts in this bill? All right. Now, the issue that I was bringing up was that those two accounts, that this bill could have been written without ever having item F in it, which is expanding the powers. But I'm not I was never questioning it. What I was trying to get at was that the governor wants to know whether we should write a bill that deals with the benefits concept proposal, or is that merely an investment theory? Okay. It can be either one. You can write a bill that says the state wishes to obtain for all the people over 65 the longevity bonus program of $250, right? And it wishes to do that by investing X amount of money in 1986, 1987, and 1988, however long it takes to buy that. Okay. We don't go any further than that. But what that does, and we can say, so that you get a decent return to fund that program. That's the level of the bill that we need in order to accomplish going out to bid for any of those theories which are embodied in his concept.
I'd like to dispose of this question that you brought up, though, item F and the trustees and whether or not it should be incorporated in here. What are the objections removing item F and taking this off the back of the trustees? What do we run into? Should we then stipulate the agency or the process of... somebody had mentioned one time it ought to be handled on Turner's pension fund investments.
Okay, Governor, you're going to have... If you're not going to give it to the trustees, in other words, if you're not going to integrate this money into an existing fund with a management board, you're going to have to create a separate fund with its own separate management bureaucracy, perhaps a separate management board with investment criteria and so forth. And in addition, it's going to be a smaller fund, particularly in the early years, it's going to be a very small fund. But I would presume that we have very little leverage. Two reasons that to ask the Board of Trustees to invest the $5 along with the $100 they already had was that, one, they have an enormous amount of leverage, even though they exercise it conservatively, perhaps that's good. And second, they had an established management structure for managing funds, so we didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
Lisa?
I'm not aware, for instance, that the retirement funds in the state, which is a huge sum of money by now, have a separate board or a separate bureaucracy. I mean, they are held separately, and they are invested by the Department of Revenue, but I'm not aware that they have... Go ahead, Jim.
Well, Mr. Rector, I mean, you have the treasurer here, but the assets that are under investment for teachers and public employees are nearly $1.7 billion, and they have advisory boards, which they... But that's an existing structure. It seems to me if you sent this money to the governor or sent it to the commissioner of revenue, that it wouldn't be put under someone's mattress.
It wouldn't be what?
It would not be put under someone's mattress.
Go ahead.
My perception of why this section is in here is in order to allow the type of investment that Dan is proposing, which is not now allowed under the permanent fund. If you don't ask the permanent fund to handle it, then you don't have
to have that
permit.
Precisely.
Well, Mr. Rudd, one of the things which I think will raise the anxiety levels of the trustees where they see it is here you're opening up the investment list of the Alaska Permanent Fund in a bill that, if it goes to the governor, is almost certain to be signed. And we don't want to be an unhappy passenger on a ship.
Dan?
I understand Jim's anxiety, but I think Deborah and John have done a very good job in drafting it, that we're only talking about the annuity account, this longevity bonus program. It's not about the whole fund. And if nothing else has come out of the presentations that I've done and that, certainly Peter has added to today, it's the fact that the insurance companies, as a part of the overall financial industry, have a lot of products that the state should be taking a look at. Not saying to the permanent fund that you have to invest the permanent fund in, but if you are going to be talking about a longevity bonus that has now been called an annuity, well, let's face it, there's only one part of the financial institutions that can really do annuities, and that's insurance companies. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I think John has quite rightly put the fact in that if we're talking about annuities, per se, that the fact is there is one financial institution that has been put into business to give those guarantees, and that's an insurance company. And I think that it would not be right to say that we now have annuity programs that you don't have the alternative to go into the natural source, which is whether it's our program or somebody else's concept. The fact is, if you are talking about retirement plans and you are talking about annuities, you should not keep the insurance companies out of the picture. But I think Marcia's quite right that you don't want to tell the permanent fund that they have to start investing in those things. But for this one annuity account, I think that's why Deborah and John have structured it, you should have the option of turning the funds over to an insurance company at a later date, and I think that's what the bill does.
Lisa? Mr. Chairman, I wonder, I would like to propose something, and you can this is wrong. I have not had a chance to review Tom Terry's memo regarding the latest concepts, and depending, have you spoken to the committee yesterday?
Yes, yesterday I did. Much of what's said in that report relates to the prior version of the concept, so a lot of it has now been taken care of from the tax.
Okay.
I would entertain a 10-minute break, but I would like to resolve this issue of item F further. I got indications from Dave Rose that this didn't give him the heartburn that it's obviously giving Jim, and it might be appropriate to have some consultation between those two individuals and perhaps our legal folks before we deal with this in a finalized manner. But I sure would like to...
I think we need Senator... We as a committee shouldn't take any action without Senator Ray here.
Well,
because we only added... I mean, we only added F as to satisfy one issue. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We changed the piece of the investment, I think it would be the preceding subsections of that, to satisfy a different issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need the senator to decide which of those is sort of important to him.
All right, well, again, setting that aside until we have the chance for you folks to consult and Senator Ray to be involved in whatever action is taken by the committee, I still then want to know what you want to do regarding alternative approaches.
Is a bill an appropriate vehicle to recommend to the governor and the legislature?
A what?
Is another bill?
Well, again,
appropriate?
I see nothing wrong with it. If you can develop another bill, it's an You remember early on when there was some talk before we rejected the idea of a needs based program. I said, hey, whether you like a needs based program or whether you like an annuity, let's develop the best of these we possibly can. And make our recommendations, which is our preference, let the legislature then shoot it down. We rejected the idea of dealing with the needs issue, but I suspect there will be a needs-based alternative before the legislature. We're going to have maybe two from this committee. There'll be who knows how many others. I'm not so sure in the final analysis that we aren't going to find that since we're dealing with what is in fact the people's money and the people's program, that the legislature may not want to bring the people more directly into the determination of how they want this accomplished. And Al Adams had said earlier on something about, hey, maybe there ought to be a vote of the people on this thing. I wouldn't, I think it might be very interesting to put on the ballot. Okay, here's an annuity, here's a method of funding this forevermore that requires $200 million from some source. Here's a needs-based one, here's one that just abolishes the whole program. Put it up for vote and let the people make that determination. I don't know. What's your view of that, Al? It may be that the legislature is going to have enormous difficulty.
I was hoping this particular committee would come out with about three or four different types of longevity bonus program. This bill package that we presently have, we've been working on for 3 months. I think it's a good concept. There's other concepts as staircasing that I had proposed last year. There is one that needs base that could become up there. There's one that I had said today is where we take the 9,900 people that was presently in the program and hire them till they die as consultants. And then you take care of that. Or the other thing is perhaps this committee will not get done with its work this particular year. We're going to go back to the legislature and repeal the repealer and says this committee is going to work for another year till you come up with a solution. But I mean, at least let's get something that the people would have an input into.
Yeah, I was thinking, though, in relation to the needs base, that was exempt from our consideration.
Right.
And also, we threw that out 3 months ago, didn't we?
Right.
Yeah. So,
right.
So I hope we've eliminated one.
Can we have a break?
Sure. Governor, let's take a break. Yeah, Bob?
A little levity.
What's that?
Sure. Regarding Chairman Adams' comment about the consultant, the labor leader some serious questioning by the Justice Department regarding a $76,000 consulting fee to the union. They said, what did you do?
Well, I know. I understand. Thanks. My question was whether a draft bill was an appropriate way, and the answer is yes.
He's finalizing the annuity.
Thanks.
Bill today.
Well, not absolutely final order. I think we pretty well thrashed it out to virtually final form. There's this question came up today, and which we're not going to take action on until Senator Ray's back, but I think it's 99% finalized. Well, I'm going to, I don't think it'll be back today, no. But I'm going to, frankly, you know, we're getting down to the wire where we're going to have any proposals. I think the next meeting should be the deadline for future proposals. Somebody wants to submit a bill that deals with the benefits concept approach, fine. Let's have it the next meeting to look at, work out what happened. But I, you know, that's going to be January. We're getting down, if we don't have the products that we want to look at,
before us. To come up with a decision. You're going to adjourn this meeting this afternoon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It won't stay over another day.
No, Bill Ray is gone, and do you have any, I'm not sure it would be necessary or productive to stay over another day, do you?
No. No, not without Bill.
No.
What happened to Cordova?
Well, then we've, I don't know. And we've got, obviously, some conflicts within the trustees and concerns that may or may not be reconciled. And during the interim, I want them to thrash that out and us to think about. I liked the idea, frankly, of having the public perceive as their dividends generated an annuity from that equates with the earnings of the permanent fund. It ties them together, creates a constituency to defend against invasion of that fund. So I'm not distraught as Jim is. On the other hand, I'm not sure what his concerns don't relate simply. They don't want to have to get in there and make these decisions regarding what insurance company or consortium or method of generating revenue is appropriate to them, rather than
I thought that was the reason that we changed
for their designee
to investment fund to accommodate.
I thought so too. Let's call the committee back to order. We I think it's concluded that any further discussion or efforts to finalize the annuity approach will await both the return of Senator Ray and deliberations between the trustees and affiliates of the Permanent Fund Committee. So I guess at this stage in time, I would like to point out that we are approaching, you know, the time by which we're to submit our proposal to the legislature, and it's been suggested that there are other proposals that might want to be put before us. Al has suggested one that I'm going to ask Deborah to respond on because we've looked at it before, and it's provocative, but unfortunately, apparently, doing indirectly what you can't do directly by law, and that's simply the hiring of everybody that we'd like to bring under the program and exempting those who are not. But I would ask that any proposals, firm recommendation proposals, statutes, or statutory or otherwise, be presented to this committee by the next meeting. That'd be the deadline for their submission. And Dan, I would ask you people, now that you've heard the discussion, the deliberation, some of the problems posed, some of the legislation that we've been discussing, if you can put together a legislative proposal that accomplishes what you think is appropriate and have that before us the next meeting, that would that give us something to work on, amend, alter, shoot down, accept, or whatever is one of our recommendations? Okay, and if anyone else, either on the committee or otherwise, has similarly such proposals, Al, I don't know if you wanted to bring your bill before the committee, the stair-stepping concept or something else, but I know that there will be, I'm sure there will be other proposals before the legislature, but Jim, I guess, is not here anymore. He's still in orbit, I guess. But with that, is there anything further that we can deliberate on appropriately today? I don't know. You apparently don't need any further discussion of the hiring of all the old timers. Okay.
I know the answer.
All right. Lisa?
Have we set a date for the next meeting?
No, we haven't yet. No?
Calendar's inside your folder.
There's no more business than on these particular issues, it's appropriate to do that. Well, what is the committee's desire? When does the legislature meet out?
14th.
We could meet on the 25th of December.
25th of December. All wear red shoes.
That would be a quick meeting. One way to guarantee it.
Well, I thought it would be easier to make our decision on Christmas.
What would be probably, well, what, you name it, I don't, any time is equally tough for me at that time of year.
I wonder how much time the consultants would need to prepare the your request.
Well, yeah, all right, that's a good question. Dan, what would be a comfortable time for you, for example, and perhaps anyone else to get your materials put together? And
well, I think obviously because of the consideration of the holidays, it might be better to go sometime after January 8th, something like that.
January 8th is a Tuesday. The 14th, you say the legislature convenes. How about just, Al, you'll be coming down through 10th,
anytime.
11th?
Anytime.
How about 10th?
Mm-hmm.
Goggles for the 10th, eh, bud?
Yeah, I'm on the ferry, I think.
You're on the ferry on the 10th, well.
No, it's the 9th, so we meet in Juneau on the morning of the 10th. Could we meet in Juneau? I think most of the legislators will be.
Well, what about that?
That's not a bad idea.
What's?
That's a wonderful idea.
That,
when does your ferry get in?
How about on the 11th? That's a Friday. We can meet.
11th of Juneau. What's the response?
Fine. No objection.
All right. If I'm sure that will meet with Senator Ray's Tertullus concerns. Good. All right. Show no then, Bill. What else we got? Anything further, Bill?
Well, you want that to start on that morning. Sometimes you adjust your starting hours because of flight schedules.
Yeah, that's right. What time?
Plane gets there at 10:35, I think you said.
We started it at 1 o'clock the last time, didn't we? In Juneau?
That makes it a fairly short day going
in. Does.
Meet Friday and Saturday.
The 10th, and then, of course, we would. Saturday would be. Does that pose any problems?
Yeah,
Saturday?
No problem.
Poses problems. Okay. All right. Why don't we figure on the 11th and, to the extent necessary, the 12th?
11 at 1 p.m.
11 at 1, right. Okay, John.
Just a suggestion, Governor, if the next meeting be less than 3 weeks before your all's report due, is due to the legislature, so I suppose it would be the last substantive meeting. If there are whatever alternative proposals are developed by whoever, they probably ought to be sent to Juneau no later than 2 weeks in advance of the meeting so that they can at least get a quick fiscal and tax review. They certainly won't get the review that the annuity proposal is undergone, but if somebody springs a new proposal at the January 11th meeting and somebody has Tom Terry what the tax consequences are, he's going to have to say, I don't know how to protect San Francisco.
Okay, well, I had said, I'm not sure you were in the room at the time, but the next meeting will be the deadline for the submission of proposals for consideration of this committee, but it would be certainly helpful, if not granted, Victoria, that you have the opportunity to evaluate them in advance of that meeting. So while we're saying the 11th will be the deadline for submission, without the state's capability of reviewing it prior to that date, it would make it very difficult to accomplish. Is that what you're saying?
I'm suggesting that if the proposal in final form to the author's satisfaction isn't in Juneau by, say, December 28th, that we can't guarantee that you're going to have any meaningful staff, legal, tax, or fiscal analysis of it by the 11th.
Mm-hmm. And our deadline for submission is what, again?
February 1.
February 1.
15, I thought.
So we would be, yeah, you're right. Okay, so I guess that's understood. If you can make that 28th date, you will get that sort of review and treatment. And absent making that date, those sorts of data will not be available to the committee, making it difficult for us to make specific recommendations, but still not necessarily concluding in general. Okay? All right, anything else? If not, I'll entertain.
I move that the meeting be adjourned.
Is there a second?
Second.
No objection. Score.
Trying to stay on the mainstream.
obligation. That's what we're talking about. They should be because of the chairman's letter. There's no
Thank you.
It's particularly our best.
I sometimes
about the plan. There's a major change in the chief.